This study concerning Korah is based on Numbers chapter 16, and we'll have a reading of just two verses. Sister Esther, please.
Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown.
All right. We have to delve a little bit into this lineage because it shows several things why this root of bitterness developed. You'll notice now that with Korah, he is of the tribe of Levi, but of a little different branch than Moses and Aaron. Because Moses and Aaron were children of Amram, and Amram was the son of Kohath. Now Korah, he was a son of Kohath, but not of the Amram line, but of what's called here Izhar. So it's a little different branch. So we have one picture that, for instance, how many people are involved here? Verse 1.
Korah, Dathan, and Abiram.
And On. Yeah. So there are four people. Now this brings up several questions right away, but we'll have to, you know, as we go along, explain some of them. But we notice here that, and in the scripture, Korah is spoken of as the, like the ringleader of this rebellion, because it's called Korah's Rebellion. But here we find that initially, when the matter was presented to Moses, that Korah brought along with him three other individuals, Dathan, Abiram, and On, and they noised their grievance to Moses. But we see that as far as Korah himself is concerned, he's a son of Levi. But notice with regard to the other three, they're all of the lineage of Reuben. They're not of the Levi line at all. So now there's a grievance here. In both categories, one with regard to the Levitical arrangement, and Korah was concerned from the standpoint of the priesthood, because the priest was of the tribe of Levi, but of Aaron. And of course Aaron was of Amram, not of Izhar. So Korah and Moses and Aaron were all sons of not only Levi, but of Kohath. It's not until the third generation, or it depends how you count it, that when it comes to the sons of Kohath, that now there's a split. And in the Moses branch, the Amram branch, you have the priesthood, basically starting with Aaron. Now with regard to the other three, being sons of Reuben, instead of having Kohath in between, there's Eliab or somebody like that mentioned. But of Reuben. Now Reuben had a grievance. See, we don't normally think of it, because Reuben was the firstborn of Jacob. See, Reuben of the 12 tribes. Reuben, but he was bypassed. Reuben. And he was bypassed, and Judah inherited the civil dominion. See? And Levi, the ecclesiastical aspect. So here's a grievance. Korah has his in the religious field, in that he felt he was slighted by the fact that Aaron of that tribe was solely confined to the priesthood, and he was bypassed. And Reuben, you could see, being the firstborn, was bypassed by the fourthborn, Judah. I think Judah was firstborn. Anyway, he inherited due to certain other things because the other two lost out too between him. So it went to the fourth one. Therefore, one's grievance was along religious lines. The other was along civil lines. Now, when it comes to the religious, it was Aaron was the chief focal point because it wasn't the son of Moses that was to be a high priest. It was Moses' brother. So here you have a root of bitterness that infiltrates down a couple generations, because Levi and Reuben were forefathers, as it were, and now you're coming down to the contemporaries, and they're complaining, now they're going to complain to Moses.
Like the great-grandchildren complaining,
isn't
it? And it would show that they've been harboring these feelings for a while, and this is just an opportunity for them to be verbalized.
So Korah was the ringleader, and the others collaborated with him because from a different motivation, and each felt that Moses and Aaron played too big a role, because Moses, it appeared, was like the civil leader, but actually he was doing both. But Aaron was in the connection with the priesthood, and so they felt then that this was too narrow. The structure of the delegation of authority seemed to be centered between Moses and his brother Aaron.
Same family.
Yeah.
Now this now rankled them. Then there were 250 princes of the assembly, in verse 2, men of renown who supported them in one way or another. So they were like bystanders giving their, by their presence, but these four, Korah and On and Dathan and Abiram, were the ones who were like the spokesmen, but Korah particularly.
Brother Frank, yes. It's repetitious three times. Princes, men of renown, and famous in the congregation. So it would show more of a responsibility.
That's And this shows a division in the ranks of Israel itself at the highest level. There is this.
Those princes too, they must have been already a little miffed, and it took a leader to pull them all together.
Now this is different than the 12 princes. See, because there's a different type of division. When it comes to the 12 princes, there's only one for each tribe, but then we had later 70. Remember there were 70 and so forth, but they would multiply as time goes on. So they would feel that they were involved, and they were recognized as having been blessed. And they probably more advanced in their thinking and everything, and here they're supporting Korah. Now, the word took there, took men, you see that in the first verse? That word men is supply.
Yeah.
It's erroneous in this case, because the verb took here is singular. And it applies to Korah. And this sentence or verse should be restructured from the way it is here, because the translators didn't quite get the thought. It's Korah who's the spokesman, but these three are with him in connection with voicing this problem that they have to Moses. And this is supported by other scriptures, because Korah is always listed. It's his rebellion. So he took, see, Korah, these men with him to support, to show it was a broad-based criticism. See, this makes it look he's not that biased. It isn't like it's all me, me. These others have a grievance too, and now they come to Moses. So now let us read verse 3 and 4. Next, that's Sister Betty.
And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, Ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. And when Moses heard it, he fell upon his face.
He's done so much for them.
Think of all he's already done for them.
He realized the gravity of the...
All right. So, from a literal standpoint, to an observer on the outside, it would look like the grievance was valid. From an impartial observer who did not think about the dividing of the Red Sea, mm-hmm. how the Lord took Moses, and about mm-hmm. the plagues. But mm-hmm. at this moment, if the other was not recognized, mm-hmm. and you look at the situation as it is currently, mm-hmm. this problem, it would look like, indeed, their grievance was valid because he did have. Moses and Aaron stood out as leaders.
Makes me think of Satan wanted to be like Most High God. It was the ambition. Yeah. Ambition is great, but if it's ambition for power, it's all wrong. Yeah. And I've noticed so many, many of the things in the Bible and in life about us, the sin is the ambition for power.
Now, the next thing, you notice that Korah, now he's the one who took them.
Mm-hmm.
But when they each voice their grievance, which it doesn't go into much detail, but I think what it is, it's summarizing in a succinct, pithy way what their complaint was, that Moses and Aaron, it was too imbalanced. There was too centralized, the power in these two individuals, particularly Moses, of course. So it says in verse 3, against Moses and against Aaron. Now notice, they say, seeing all the congregation are holy.
Very clever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even just the 250 and the four. We're all holy. Well, 2 million of us.
And now what has happened, when you go back to, in the Old Testament mm-hmm. earlier, that probably would be in Deuteronomy and in Exodus, or in Deuteronomy goes later. But that's a review, in many cases, of what happened in Exodus, the lessons, where the Lord said that if you hearken to my mm-hmm. ways and are obedient to my counsel, mm-hmm. I will make of you a kingdom of priests. This is being spoken in the broad sense.
Mm-hmm.
And had Israel complied, this would have been true. But this is a promise of the future.
Mm-hmm.
But they were taking it as applying now.
Oh, yes.
That when it says that ye are a kingdom of priests, they were thinking in their day,
yeah.
but they have no kingdom. It's all Aaron and Moses. Where are we? We're not in this picture, see? And yet, so they're justifying their grievance with a scripture where the Lord had said this. And also there's another place where, for instance, in connection with the law, that ye might be a holy people to me, like the distinction between the clean and the unclean, mm-hmm. and that the reason for this was to separate them as a separate people. So they felt they were a holy people, and they felt he was overly righteous. What's that term that they use when one...
Self-righteous? Mm-hmm.
Self-righteous, that's right. Mm-hmm. They felt that he was assuming too much authority.
Just for the tape, Exodus 19, 5 and 6 would be two scriptures.
All know. Right, thank you. Now, when Moses heard this, now, immediately, he prostrates himself. And this is really before the Lord, but he thinks quick and reflects on this, and then you'll notice he does not expostulate here.
Mm-hmm.
As far, he does not condemn them. But notice what he says. Did we read 5 and 6?
No.
All right.
3 and 4 was read.
All right, let's read 5, 6, and 7. That'll be enough.
And he spake unto Korah and unto all his company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord will shew who are his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him. Even him whom he hath chosen will he cause to come near unto him. This do, take you censers, Korah, and all his company, and put fire therein, and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord doth choose, he shall be holy. Ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi.
He is now setting up a test and saying that they should prepare themselves for a contest in the morning and that they would be all in readiness, Korah and the 250, each of them with their censers, and the coals of fire from the altar, and with incense, and ready for service, whom the Lord would choose. Now, what he's doing is, this is the service of the priesthood, because in the offering of incense, the priest goes into the holy with the incense. That's his prerogative. And offer prayers in the holy and so forth, and now to see who will the Lord choose to go in. So, this is now Korah and all his company. Now, he says, ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. Notice that.
He turns the words right back against them, the words they'd used on Moses.
In other words, what he's saying, in effect, is this. You've criticized me for taking too much upon yourself for doing these things. And he says, you, it's you, you're taking upon yourselves. But this is a contest. We'll try to be fair as to whom the Lord will choose. But aren't you satisfied with the service you already have? Don't you feel that you've already been blessed as a Kohathite? Because the Kohathites, which they were, privileged them to be the carriers of the boards and so forth when they go into the transit. And they would be like next in line, but not with the priesthood. But it was as much, aren't you satisfied with what the Lord has appointed you? So you're thinking, I'm taking too much authority upon me, but you want to extend your domain from that which was given to you. And he is hinting that this is being presumptuous and a dangerous posture to take, because if it should be negative, they're going to be demoted inferentially. So if they're not satisfied with it, in any event, the Lord is to settle this decision. Now let's read 8 through 11.
And Moses said unto Korah, hear, I pray you, ye sons of Levi. Seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel hath separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them? And he hath brought thee near to him and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee, and seek ye the priesthood also? For which cause both thou and all thy company are gathered together against the Lord? And what is Aaron that ye murmur against him?
All right. So he's more or less telling what's in back of this whole thing. As far as Korah is concerned, this is addressed to them, because the other three, they're not even sons of Levi. See, the other three that are with him. So he's turning his attention to Korah, showing that Korah really was the chief spokesman at this time. And it's along religious lines, and he's saying, aren't you satisfied with what the Lord has already privileged you in connection with the service he's appointed? Now notice this at the end. What is Aaron that ye murmur against him? Why is that there? It would suggest, I would think, I'm not, of course, this is a guess, that Aaron was very mild-mannered by nature. His very acts and all was something that there would be no in him. Just to look at him, you would say he is not self-seeking in connection for advancement. He's very humble, and he did everything that Moses would say and everything. So it's really, the fault is mostly with Moses, but Moses has to act because he's in an administrative capacity. He has to speak and give orders, but those orders were from direct communication with the Lord.
Yeah.
So now, to show what will happen eventually, will show the Lord will show his favor upon Moses and upon Aaron. So by different acts that will ensue later in the chapter, it will show that the Lord endorsed both of these individuals. Moses in his peculiar way, and Aaron. Yes.
Aaron must have been more meek and easy to for them, because he made that golden image while Moses was up in the mount.
Yes.
And yet it's interesting, Aaron was the spokesman for Moses, and yet he didn't have the leadership in the...
Yeah.
But Moses had a pretty good diction. It was just, for that time, I guess he just felt insecure. Had such a long waiting period for that.
Now, in verse 12, we'll read just 12 through 15. Next.
And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, we will not come up. Is it a small thing that thou hast brought us up out of a land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us? Moreover, thou hast not brought us into a land that floweth with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. And Moses was very wroth, and said unto the Lord, Respect not thou their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, neither have I hurt one of them.
All right. Now, when we go back to verse 12, we can see that while these others accompanied Korah originally, that when we read these verses, they didn't all take place at that exact moment. Moses fell on his face and made this suggestion of a thing to, on the morrow and so forth as a contest. And then later we find that Dathan and Abiram are not present now. So there's been an interval of time, a space of time, where they are absent, have gone back to their tents, and he sends for them to come back to have a further audience with him.
Perhaps even more personalized, because the other was there. He wanted just to talk to them alone, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it would be logical, because they were the original ones who brought the grievance. He would be dealing with them, not with the public, or even the 250.
And On is not mentioned again other than the first verse, so he may have been the least vociferous of the four.
Yes, and he dropped out of it. He may have seen that what was. Maybe On got cold feet, as it were, we call. And he may have been present when Moses had said, is this a small thing that you've assumed? And maybe he came to his senses to realize, what have I gotten into? And he is not singled out later. So when the punishments are given out, it was not inflicted on On. So On was like coaxed into something that he felt that I better get out of this. And so he just dropped silently out. So this shows there are different characters, different type of people, different motivations. And so, all right, now, he calls to Dathan and Abiram, and they refuse to come at his behest, Moses' behest. Now, of course, this is an act of insubordination in itself. And now look at the sarcastic comments that they give, that originally you promised us to go to the land, but they don't see it was the Lord that made this initial promise to go to a promised land. And if they had any problem, it should be with the Lord. But it shows you that people cannot recognize the divine leadings, how he used Moses in the separating of the sea, spoke to him personally, face to face. And then when there was this meeting of God, originally, when they got into the Sinai area, where he came down with a shining face, all these things are soon forgotten. And will you make yourself altogether a prince over us? And so he's accusing him of leading a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. They probably chafed all the time, that generation, and maybe their fathers before them. They must have discussed this. They didn't like Moses telling them what to do.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Human nature.
This is what you call a root of bitterness.
Yeah.
Springing up, just waiting the favorable time.
Yeah.
So they waited a while when they didn't get into the promised land and all right away, and they were in there here making the tabernacle, and then they had these wanderings and so forth. And this is a later chapter. I mean, this is Numbers. This isn't Exodus.
Shows the necessity for us to recognize when a wrong thought comes to us and to deal with it right in the beginning.
Thou hast not brought us into a land that floweth with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields. And wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? What's he saying there?
The rest of the ones that supported the princes and the ones that supported the rebellion.
Put out the eyes, is he putting there a story to it?
I thought he meant, you haven't given us the land of milk and honey. You're going to put their eyes out so they can't tell where they are?
Oh,
No, I was thinking from a standpoint now that he's leading them around. He wants to lead them by the nose as though they were blind men.
Oh.
For instance, a blind man needs this help.
Yeah.
He needs to know where he's going and needs to, but by his being exercising dictatorial powers, and especially this is true to human nature, these dictators, what happens when they're in power for several years, the people become non-resistant, mm-hmm. and they just meekly follow mm-hmm. the leading of a strong character. Mm-hmm. And they're accusing him that he is building himself up as a leader, making like a god of himself, and thus mesmerizing all the other. And that now he's even trying to do, when they brought this grievance, they don't want to go there because here he's reasoning with Korah about the wrongs that they have done, and now for them to go, surely they're expecting that he would try to reason with them along some line.
Oh, yeah. And Brother Frank, yeah. the fact that Moses became very wroth, this would help justify them. They think, see, he isn't humble. He wants to be a dictator, whereas
yes, yes.
in righteous indignation,
yeah.
Moses reacted exactly the way the Lord would want him to.
When you can't win no battle.
So this was like a spirit of democracy. They feel, and this is what's happening today too. Mm-hmm. The public wants to know everything the president does in private when he has a leader from a different nation here. They want to know all that went on in that private room, their conversation and all. They feel it's their right. He is our representative. We'd like to know too. Mm-hmm. And the public would like to know.
Sure.
But by the time the public would get it, it would be pretty slanted information.
Sure.
So this spirit of wanting that everything should be shared, and it's so bad now you have freedom of access of information, and that here you have individuals and corporations who have access to government records about you, your taxes, mm-hmm. how much taxes you pay, what you do with regard to payment of bills, mm-hmm. how you prompt. They want to know everything about the personal lives of individuals. So there's no more privacy. Mm-hmm. They feel that the public has that right. And the laws are being legislated that way. Mm-hmm. But what it's doing, it's leading on to anarchy, mm-hmm. eventually. It gets to a point that they have to then have military rule because they cannot go through parliamentary procedures. The parliamentary procedures are all broken down to share the information the way that it's wanted. How are you going to reverse that?
Uh-huh.
One by one, enact laws to abrogate the previous or disannul the previous laws. Why, that would take years to do that. So it means that the government, when it gets to the point where they feel it might be of no return whatsoever, then a new government has to take over like a dictatorship and mm-hmm. just abrogate all previous mm-hmm. arrangements mm-hmm. and start fresh. And that's a dictatorship, which we think mm-hmm. will come eventually.
Brother Frank, yeah. it seems there's a measure of this even among the Brotherhood, too, though, or there can be. Not recognizing what true humility is and wanting everything to be so democratic and shared above and beyond what it should be. And I think of that scripture in the Gospels where Jesus said some do miracles and so on, cast out devils in his name, but they're really workers of iniquity and it's really lawlessness, which would be not recognizing the Lord's arrangement and how the Lord deals with certain individuals, the order that should be maintained in the church.
Now if we go back and look at who Moses represents, you see, and Aaron, then you can see that if in this case it represents the Lord, let's say, I'm just speaking now in general terms, like God and his son Jesus, that they're changing the Old Testament. All the laws now today are like there should be women preachers, there should be no discrimination about your character, whether you are homosexual or whatever you are, that everything should be completely democratic mm-hmm. on the base of, and mm-hmm. there's no definition of boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
No definition about, no boundaries, see. Now we had, the odd part of this is in history, that when a power like this did arise, like Korah, let's say the papacy, for instance, they meekly did submit. So when Jesus came at his first advent, he says, you are your father the devil, and you don't listen to me, but when another comes in my name, see, when another comes, oh, him you will listen to, see. So this is the earlier part of history during the papal reign, supremacy and so forth, the people did. And the Pope did do the very things that Korah was having a problem thinking Moses. And they don't think of what God's word is, and what his, that call no man father, and all these definitions that, and the celibacy of the priesthood, that they will forbid to marry the Antichrist,
mm-hmm.
that would be one of the characteristics. So all these things, they are like changing,
mm-hmm.
changing the divine format or instruction as to how the church should be truly governed.
Don't they say forbidding to eat meat too in their
yes,
heart?
Yes, that's right.
And that, you know, Jesus said that all things are Paul, that all things were good, you know.
Now, when he says, respect not thou their offering in verse 15, what's this saying in effect?
Telling the Lord to disregard them because of their attitude, their offerings and sacrifices.
Notice that he ties in that the Korah as still being the ringleader, and that the 250 with their censers and so forth, that even though he's talking to Dathan and Abiram and rebutting their presumptuous attitude, you know, where they criticize Moses, he says, consider not thou their offering, not Dathan and Abiram's, because they refuse to go up.
Oh, yeah.
But to squelch this rebellion, nip it right in the bud, right then and there, by some remarkable demonstration of divine authorization of Moses and Aaron, put this rebellion down, stamp it down, and make that manifestation seen in connection with this contest that is about to take place.
The only way the nation of Israel would recognize it would be by some miraculous work of the Lord. No matter what Moses did, it would still be, then they'd accuse, but it has to be something from the Lord now.
Now, he did not use his authority to extract from those that he might have put pressure on, like, for instance, the two sons of Eli, you know, when there was to be a tenth part and so forth, and what they went was to the stew pot, and they speared the best parts of all offerings and so forth, and took more than they should have and so forth. This was a they manipulated the prerogative of the priesthood and the Levitical arrangement to their own aggrandizement. And they took advantage of it, and the people resented it. They resented it, but what they didn't say anything, but until it got so bad that they brought to Eli's attention to what practice was going on and so forth. And then we find that divine providence that did put a stop to that. All right, let's read 16 through 19.
And Moses said unto Korah, be thou and all thy company before the Lord, thou and they, and Aaron tomorrow, and take every man his censer, and put incense in them, and bring ye before the Lord every man his censer, 250 censers, thou also and Aaron, each of you his censer. And they took every man his censer, and put fire in them, and laid incense thereon, and stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the congregation.
All right. Take two more, because that'll finish the... Three more.
And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell upon their faces and said, O God, of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation?
All right. So now we find that when this test is taken, this is presumably on the morrow, when they're gathered, and the people are excited as to how this contest is going to come out. So it's more than just the 250, but the 250 are the ones who are especially going to be in this. So when he uses the word congregation, it sometimes refers to the 250, and sometimes it refers to the people at large who are secondary witnesses of what is about, because these 250 are standing in the court. They're standing with their censers, with incense. And notice there's 252 now.
Oh, yes.
Because there's Korah's censer, because he is, that makes 251, and then Aaron. So Aaron is in this grouping, too. The glory of the Lord appears, and then it says in verse 21, separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell upon their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh.
They sense what's coming, don't
that's
they?
That's right.
That the Lord's going to punish them all.
Now, this is done in their presence.
Mm.
So they can see the true attitude of Moses was not, he was not vindictive, looking for their destruction.
Uh-huh.
Incidentally, this is something like David's spirit. You know, he was, had occasion to have Saul put to death. But he refused to take advantage of what seemed to be divine providence. And he just said he waited for the Lord to make that decision as to be when he would be king, even though he had been anointed earlier by Samuel. And they fell down the face. Now Aaron joins Moses in falling down.
It's almost like a weeping prayer, isn't it,
yeah,
to the Lord? Do they all have to be punished because Korah led them?
The 22 means Aaron and Moses fell.
Yes,
on, I think.
That's the way I would understand that.
Not all the other people.
No.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones talking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shall one man
right.
sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation? And mm-hmm. so the one man is really Korah. Mm-hmm. See, he's really the one that is...
And has, Dathan and Abiram weren't there at this point.
That's
morning.
Right.
Yet the Lord had to give this kind of a lesson for all eternity so that the people in the future will realize... You can't follow a bad leader either, one who starts something against the Lord.
And notice that they entitle God as the God of the spirits of all flesh. The spirits there would be breath or ruach. Mm-hmm. In the New Testament it would be pneuma, which sometimes means breath, literal breath, and sometimes it means soul, spirit, the spirits of all flesh. That this is,
same
for instance, say he wouldn't be like the God of all breaths.
No.
But he's the God of all souls.
And he's the God that has given life to all of us.
Let's now read 23 through 20 through 30.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the congregation, saying, Get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan and Abiram. And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, Depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest ye be consumed in all their sins. So they get up from the tabernacle of Korah and Dathan and Abiram on every side, and Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door of their tent, and their wives and their sons and their little children. And Moses said, Hereby ye shall know that the Lord hath sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of mine own mind. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth, and swallow them up, then all that appertain unto them, and they, go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord.
All right. So Moses speaks to the congregation what they're to do. They're to remove themselves from the residences or tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And he goes, Moses goes, to the ones of Dathan and Abiram. And it doesn't mention Korah. This is something that has to be kept in mind because you can be confused with several statements in this chapter later with events that actually took place. So he goes there, and the elders of Israel follow him. And then he says, Depart from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest ye be consumed in all their sins. And so they responded. In verse 27, they respond. But when this occurs, you'll notice that in verse 27, Dathan and Abiram now, instead of remaining inside their tents, they come outside. And
to see what's taking place.
That's one of the things, because they could hear all this commotion. And they stood in the door of their tents and noticed the control they had over their families.
Mm-hmm.
that their wives, their sons, and their little children, that
be consumed. And Judas says, hate even the garment spotted by the flesh. You have to be very careful of the contact when there's that gross sin.
Now, 28, we had that read, right?
And through 30.
Okay. Right. If these men die the common death, or if they be, the Lord hath not sent me, but if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. All right. So Moses sets a condition which will attest as to whether he is in the right or whether the grievance of these two is correct. And, of course, the Lord would respond in favor of Moses. We find out subsequent.
Makes me think of Elijah and Elisha. The same idea contested. The man of the Lord, the man of God, can prove to them that...
Let fire come down from heaven on the sacrifice of the priest of Baal, if he be God. But if the Lord of Israel, if Jehovah is God, then let it come down on Elijah's sacrifice. Yeah. So here's the context. Now, let's read 31 through 35.
And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them. For they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense.
Right.
Now, these tremendous demonstrations that happened back there, to me, would be only then a sample of the tremendous demonstration that the Lord can do at the end of the age, end of the present evil world.
See, the pastor gives an explanation of this, as I recall, that he says that when the ground swallows them up, that this is they go into the world, and they're swallowed up in the world, this class. And overcome that way, and nothing comes of them and their activities. But when we read this account, it's a little too dramatic. And it sounds as though it is a more demonstrable situation. And it's collectively. With those who are swallowed up in the world, it's one here, one there, and not everybody knows about everybody else. Very little. You usually only know about those in your own locale.
Not only that, but the ones that were left were afraid it would happen to them also. They cried out. They were so frightened at what was happening. And they wouldn't be so frightened if they found out somebody was back in the world. And Brother Frank, there seems to be a distinction, too, with Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Their families were involved. But with the 250, the fire just particularly picked out the 250. So it must not have shown such family support on the parts of the others.
No, being that they supported Korah and his rebellion, and it doesn't tell the background of who they are, but they were men of renown, which would mean of various tribes, and possibly some other Levites, because Issachar was not the only son of Kohath. You had Issachar and Amram, but there were a couple others. So it could have been a broader based thing, but it was the 250 who tagged along with the four that originally went to Moses. But we find here that On is not mentioned in the tents of where he was. His tent was not affected. But we find that no special mention of Korah's tent. It just said, for instance, it tells that get you up from the tabernacles of the three. But then it only zeroes in on the two. In verse 27, they got up to the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, Abiram, and every side, and Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door and so forth, but it doesn't say about Korah, which becomes significant because we have another puzzling situation that arises later, and which gives some explanation as to what happened here.
But it's like 32 fish named Zipporah. The earth opened their mouth, swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that are appertained unto Korah, and all their
goods. That is, those that were involved with Korah, but not all were, which we'll find out. Some were spared of Korah's. Because in Chronicles, when it gives the lineage, it shows that Korah had sons, and there was a lineage that's traced through.
Ah.
That would be in a later chapter, Numbers 26, I think.
Satan, who had instigated the rebellion.
Oh, he's back at that, definitely.
I thought maybe Korah even pictured Satan. And then
Korah is
Herod.
All
his houses and all those that continue to follow and rebel against the Lord.
But the by putting together other scriptures, it appears that at least two sons of Korah did not die.
Oh.
They did not support their father.
Oh.
And you'll notice that, of course, Korah wasn't in the tent to come out, so therefore he didn't come out.
Mm-hmm.
But it suggests that the sons departed.
Went up on the hill.
And went earlier, see, when they saw this desert. And they were not in harmony. Mm-hmm. They were not in harmony with their father's protest. Let's look at Numbers 26. It's fairly near the beginning. Oh, here it is. Notice 9 through 11 or so. Sister Gail, if you read that, please.
And the sons of Eliab, Nemuel and Dathan and Abiram. This is that Dathan and Abiram which were famous in the congregation, who strove against Moses and against Aaron in the company of Korah, when they strove against the Lord. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, together with Korah, when that company died. What time the fire devoured 250 men, and they became a sign. Notwithstanding, the children of Korah died not.
Oh.
All right. Now, this verse 10 is another verse that, it's like this with the thieves on the cross,
mm-hmm.
this day and so forth. Mm-hmm. The commas and all give the, well, for instance, I would understand it something like this. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up. Now, stop there. And swallow them up. That is, Dathan and Abiram and those men that pertain to Korah that we read about earlier, but not the sons, because it mentions them later as being an exception. And together with Korah, because immediately when the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, it says the next verse, when we were reading number 16, it said that fire came down from heaven, too, at that time, and destroyed the 250 mm-hmm. who were in the court, presumably, mm-hmm. with their censers yet. See, they are staying there. Mm-hmm. Together with Korah, meaning together with the consumption that occurred with regard to the 250 and Korah.
Oh.
You pause there. It's two separate incidents. They're two companies that are destroyed. One, the earth opens her mouth and swallows, and the other, fire from heaven comes down. The fire destroyed Korah. And the earth opened its mouth and destroyed Dathan and Abiram. I'm just taking the two individuals to make a separation.
The fire...
The earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, the ones that had been talking about, swallowed them up, together with Korah when that company died. See, Korah is with that company when it dies. When the fire devoured the 250 men, and they became a sign. Because we haven't read about the censers yet, have we? About them, how they were made, and plates. So we'll come back, we can come back to this verse. Because those plates were a memorial of Korah's rebellion. And the consumption by fire. And the hammering of these censers like fig leaves and hung on the altar, on all sides of the altar.
I can't help but think about how it's, the Lord works the same way with Satan and his cohorts of fallen angels. The
That's
ones
right.
who follow him and listen to him,
That's fire.
They're going to go down. And
by fire.
And some will stop, the, we believe the son may have repented and they would be would escape that destruction.
And in Young's Concordance, the word Korah means baldness, which would, since hair is a symbol of consecration, that definition is their second death, too.
That's right. That's right.
No evidence of consecration. First life.
Now, we didn't finish chapter 16.
No. Starting with 36.
36. Let's read 36 through 40.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, and take up the censers out of the burning, and scatter thou the fire yonder, for they are hallowed. The censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for a covering of the altar, for they offered them before the Lord. Therefore they are hallowed, and they should be a sign unto the children of Israel. And Eleazar the priest took the brazen censers, wherewith they were burnt and offered, and they were made broad plates for a covering of the altar, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger which is not of the seed of Aaron come near to offer incense before the Lord, that he be not as Korah and as his company, as the Lord said to him, by the hand of Moses.
All right. So when they would be put on the altar, to my understanding, they would be hung like plates, overlapping, at least three sides of the altar. Cover the altar, not meaning on the top. In other words, the top is used for the sacrifice. The top of the altar was earth, sand, on which the wood was laid in the sacrifice. So the covering of the altar means the covering of its size, the size of the altar. And they hung there like leaves. And when people would see it, if it were made like into one plate around you, there would be no memory of the 250. But when they see these like dried leaves hanging separately, individually, overlapping, they would say, this is a rather strange altar. So what is the meaning of that? Where, if they were hammered, there would be no memorial. As time would go by, people would forget. But every time anybody not familiar with the altar, a little boy might say, well, how come there's those things? And right away the story would come out about Korah and the rebellion.
And there would be 251, right, including
That's
Korah.
Right.
And also the altar wasn't that big, so with 250 it would mean there would be a lot of overlap
that
it would really cover.
The book surprises, amazes me that back there in the wilderness, yet as they were, able to heat that metal, get it hot enough, because your father in the foundry talks about the metal being 2,300 degrees or something, certain metals. It amazes me that they could do that and get it hot enough to recast it or whatever they had to do. It was quite
Well, the ancients had many methods of doing it, too. Air right away will do a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
A bellows.
Oh, yes.
That's how the blacksmith...
Oh, yes, that's right, to get it hot enough.
Sure. You just feed it a good, strong supply of oxygen. And it gets like an acetylene torch.
Uh-huh.
Just like an acetylene torch. And those bellows have a snout.
Uh-huh.
So when you would be directed in a very concentrated manner, and as soon as it hits the flame... It would be a roaring fire, so you could bring
the heat
up. Of
course, they had to know how to make the altar and all the other things in the first place, so they would certainly know how to melt something up and redo it.
And there's tricks of the trade as how to retain the heat so it wouldn't be lost. For instance, at the steel companies, Bessemer Steel and so forth in Pittsburgh, when they closed down a furnace or they built a furnace up to do the melting, it had to take a long time. To do it. They did it in stages. And they didn't shut it off suddenly because it would ruin it. It would ruin the casting and the whole setup by just removing the heat. So they would just remove it slowly, the heat.
Yeah.
And they added not only the oxygen, but they had other additives that they added to the flame to increase the heat. Now back to the account. So this is a memory then that justifies that nobody but Aaron and his seed would be of the priesthood that could come near to the altar. Now before, Kohath not only carried the boards and all, but there were other services. When the people of Israel came in with a steer, a big animal, that animal had to be slaughtered, and of course he would be brought to the north side of the altar between the laver and the door of the holy, and would be his throat slit. But that steer would have to be then quartered. The hide would have to be taken off, and all that was very laborious work and would require several people to lift that animal up, mm-hmm. to get the hide off in the convenient. And the normal way is to strip it down mm-hmm. using the benefit of gravity. And you would hang the animal, see, and pull it down and strip it, and then it would be conveniently opened up and pieced and cleansed, the innards taken out and so forth. Now, who did that? The priest certainly didn't do that. The priest, and that labor aspect would be done by Levites. And so they participated and they were appointed to service, probably certain hours, certain days, so it would be parceled out. And maybe this parceling out and distribution of the labor, they thought, should be also done with the priesthood. See, that idea of sharing. Because David had a sharing, too, later that he did. All right, now one other. Let's continue once more. Finish this. 41 through 50.
But on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, "Ye have killed the people of the Lord." And it came to pass, when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, "Get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment." And they fell upon their faces. And Moses said unto Aaron, "Take a censer, and put fire therein from off the altar, and put on incense, and go quickly unto the congregation, and make an atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from the Lord, and the plague is begun." And Aaron took as Moses commanded, and ran into the midst of the congregation. And behold, the plague was begun among the people. And he put on incense, and made an atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. Now they that died in the plague were 14,700, beside them that died about the matter of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the plague was stayed.
All right.
My, what a mighty demonstration.
Yeah, yeah. They don't remember it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. The truth is not only stranger than fiction, it's even more traumatic than the fiction, the action that took place.
Have they reversed
what
everything?
That everything reversed. Once you've had a convention, the Lord never does anything. He does it
suddenly. Doesn't do anything suddenly.
Never does anything dramatically. The kingdom is going to come.
She hasn't
in.
Read the Bible. Yeah. That's for sure.
How would the world ever know the kingdom was here if it wasn't something terrific that happened?
So they fall on their faces again, the two. And now this about Aaron, there's a place, I don't know offhand just where it is, where it attributes to Aaron bravery in doing this. Because the congregation is so poisoned in their thinking that in spite of what happened, the fire coming down and destroying, and the earth opening of its mouth, that there was still this spirit of madness, it would be in one of the Psalms. Now, in this, one writer, I can't recall just for sure who it was, likened that this act of staying the plague was like in the midst, and it says the plague could not go by, so there's like a dividing line that on one side was plague and on the other side no plague. So when he ran into the congregation and they started falling on the ground, he went right to that spot and like cordoned it off by demonstration with his incense, and the plague stopped there. It couldn't go no further. And they likened that to Jesus. when he was on the cross, that you had the penitent thief and the other thief who was not penitent, and that he was in the midst, and that acted like the staving off of death. Mm-hmm. Not the elimination of death, but the stoppage of death, and that he was in the twain in the midst. It also helped to show Aaron's authority, that God was using Aaron, not only Moses, but Aaron too, and that when Aaron did this, that God was recognizing Aaron. So, and this is not the end of it. We have another chapter, which you can't read now, where he even goes on this context even further.
About how long of their 40 years in the wilderness, would this have been like the first quarter or first half? Or were they, how far along were they in their 40 years, I wonder?
It's not too long. Let's see.
It's hard to find it down.
Because you see...
Oh, just a few chapters before they were condemned to their 40 years. So
that's
early.
Right. That'd be it. And that was 2 years, 38 years.
Oh, I bet they didn't do much rebelling after they did that.
It'll tell a lot of things about their encampments and so forth, but that's historical, and some of it is interim statements that are not necessarily sequential. But this is relatively early, because Numbers is quite a fairly long book. So we're only one-third through? Yeah, about one-third.
Frank, is this another reason why you think that the earth opening up only affected Dathan and Abiram and not Korah? In Psalm 106:17, it says, "The earth opened and swallowed up Dathan and covered the company of Abiram, and a fire was kindled in their company, and the flame burned up the wicked." Now, surely, if the earth had swallowed up Korah, him his being the ringleader, you'd think he would be mentioned there.
Yeah.
And he isn't.
No. Yeah, I assume that Korah was consumed with the others. And he might have ordered them to stay there.
To see what his rebellion was leading to. So he could
When the Lord says, let me destroy this congregation, but he's talking about the 250 in that instance, and their punishment is just allayed for the moment. And then he goes to the tents of Korah, Dathan, goes to their residences, in which the two who didn't come up were still there, who came out, and their families with them. And then it would be assumed that Korah didn't come out because he wasn't in his tent at that time. But that which pertained to Korah in the tent did go down. But it doesn't mention that because it has to make allowance. How was it that their children were spared? They had forsaken us. But it showed the disapproval of the congregation had to recognize the sin. And so it didn't mean that Korah's sons necessarily, if they deserted them and were not in harmony with them, then that would be a reason for their being spared. The fact that On, his tent, wasn't swallowed up and all, suggests that he was spared. Because he didn't pursue the matter any further than the initial contact.
Probably sorry he ever got in it in the first place. If this goes on film someday, as you've suggested, what a mighty, mighty witness to the world. If these things have happened before, these people, you better get in line. It might be part of that
It will embarrass, too, Israel. That they don't know their own history. How strong it is. And this is in the Pentateuch. This is not even in the Half Torah, which they have neglected for many, many centuries. The Pentateuch, the Torah, but even that they don't know.
But they've always thought so much of Moses in their minds, they've elevated him, and yet they don't know what happened under his authority.
So what happens then next? He has 12 rods made, for each of the tribes. And then Aaron has his rod, which is representative of really Levi, but with Aaron's name on it.
These are the ones that budded.
Aaron's rod budded.
Aaron's
name being on the rod means that of the tribe of Levi, of Kohath, of Amram, that it was Aaron. That he's as the one. So by putting the personal names on, it narrowed it down. And so they're the 12 princes of the And then you had Levi, who was not considered, like, in the 12 tribes, that Aaron's rod, that's the one that budded. But when it budded and came out, that was a terrific miracle, too, because what had happened, not merely, it had the leaf, the bud, and the fruit, all on the one branch, on the one rod. The three stages of development comprehended in the one night, in when it was taken out. So when he would come out with this rod, and then on it would be this name, why, that would be like a miracle of nature, that this would be astounding miracle.
Now, that was a dead rod. I mean, it was.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Now, there's so many people who have never seen a Bible. I'm thinking of natives of other countries, never heard, and they've been in other religions. And when this is all made plain to them, they're going to see that it's Jesus been appointed by the Lord, and they better all listen. Isn't that the picture?
Sometimes when oaths are made by different countries in Greece, like Homer or Zilean, I forget which, and some other countries, the staff or rod is an indication of something that it's impossible to change. So this makes it supernatural.
Yeah.
And that's based on in this practice, this custom of some nations, was based on the practice that when you cut a piece from the tree, and it's a long time with no water and other things like that, that becomes a symbol of permanence when it's a rod made for authority. That's a rod of no change. Like immutable. And so, but when it changes, why, this is unbelievable. I mean, how does a rod that has no connection with the earth or with water, how does it bud?
And Brother Frank, Korah then would be the third, the most serious in the progression of evil shown in regard to the Judas class. Cain, Balaam, and Korah perished in the gainsaying of Korah.
Yes, now say that once more. So
right. In Jude, it gives a progression of evil. Woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, ran greedily after the error of Balaam for reward, and perished in the gainsaying of Korah. So it's the most severe degree of the three evil conditions listed.
Yes. Actually, all three represent second death. But of the three,
that they thought with God's arrangement.
Because Cain, too, was the murderer. He's the symbol of the second death class, too.
Now, because Jude also mentions that this class speaks evil of dignities, the real rebellion is against the Lord and against Jesus, but it would also be, as it could be manifested down here, against the ones the Lord really
used. But how do you... So a lot depends on the interpretation of providence. And people, they judge providence, and two people can look at the same providence and get two different conclusions. One can look on it as disfavor, and the others can look on it as favor. And this is the study of the human race, that there's a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof is death. That those of a certain class can feel that they are on the Lord's side, definitely, and so forth. So the only determining factor is the Lord's word itself. It has to be the Lord's, as the Lord's word reveals, as to what's right and wrong. Otherwise, you can't tell what's right and wrong.
But some sincerely believe they're right, even though they're wrong. So that's the reason they all have to come to an accurate knowledge of truth. The reason Jesus gave a ransom for all, and he's immediate... Wait a minute now. They must all be saved from Adamic death and come to that accurate knowledge of the truth. And then they better shape up the world. To me, that's the way I see it. It's going to be made so plain to them, like it says in Isaiah.
Well, we can't cover it all on this subject even now, today, because because there's other, which might be considered semantics, but there's other lessons also. But we just wanted to talk one other thing. It says, they perished in the, what you just read, the gainsaying of Korah. What is the gainsaying of Korah?
Oh, the verbal rebellion.
All right.
Well, if we put them down, we'll come forward.
I could it be also gain that for gain? I mean, I'm not getting...
No, because Balaam... see, it lists them what the problem was. Balaam was for greed or gain.
Oh, yes.
And Cain jealousy, but Korah was contradiction, dispute. It's anti-logian, like the word logos, word, against word, like a verbal contradiction, a dispute. It's usually, most cases, contradiction.
Again,
he contradicted Moses.
Who was doing God's, and quoting God's word.
That's right. So I think
that's
we should...
That's the game thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We can continue.
So it's like the word antichrist sometimes can mean like Christ or against Christ. And it's usually against Christ because it's a pseudo-Christ or false or fake Christ.
But
the anti-Lutheran, you see, is a favorable aspect, but it means like Adam in his perfection, a corresponding Christ. So the word anti there means that Jesus was a perfect man like Adam was a perfect man. But this is in the favorable sense because his life became an offset for sin. And there you have anti, the word anti. So it means you have anti-Lebanon. You have all kinds of words with the word. Some of them are in a bad sense and some not a bad sense.
Well, now, I have a little question. If Satan was the instigator of all of this rebellion against God from the beginning, taking as many with him as he could, those who were ensnared by that, maybe even unknowingly, they would come forth and get the real truth, but then wouldn't that be the thought? They do
I view it as, like this. It says, let no root of bitterness crop up. That first initial responsibility is the personal aspect. Then Satan capitalizes on the person's wrongdoing. So we can't blame him for everything in that sense.
That's right.
It's the person becomes in a condition where he becomes amenable or susceptible. Like Adam, it doesn't attribute Satan for the fall of the human race. It was Adam that sinned. But the adversary capitalized on Eve. To do the... I think we will close this...
We can talk inside. We don't have to stop.
Sure.
So for the recording's sake, we can conclude the study here.